Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
To Alive to Thrive. I am so excited to be with you on this beautiful July day here in the middle of the country, in the heartland. My name is Brenda Fraser. I'm your host today of Alive to Thrive. Our guest, Mary Alice Wright, is someone I've met in the last few months through my store, Butterfly and Moon. Most of you know by now that we opened up a gift shop on South Main Street, 814 South Main Street in historic St. Charles. And it has been quite the journey and quite the experience. I've met so many wonderful women, Mary Alice being one of them, and she is just like a dear friend that I've known forever. And I want to welcome her to the show. She's calling in also from Missouri. Welcome, Mary Alice. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you, Brenda, for having me on the show today.
Well, welcome. And Mary Alice, you've been around the country and lived in quite a few places, more places than most people. And I apologize if there's background noise. I think I'm getting a delivery here at the studios. But tell us about growing up all over the country and what that was like to be moving around so much with your family.
Sure. I know I didn't have a typical childhood. That's for sure. My father was in the Air Force, and I was actually born on an Air Force base in Abilene, Texas, West Texas, a little tiny town. And I actually moved a total of 16 times during my childhood out of the 18 years that I lived at home with my parents. It was quite an experience, sometimes twice in 1 year. At one point, my father, Marshall Knapp, he basically thought it would be a good idea for us to buy a trailer because he wanted to give us some stability, my mom and myself, before moving, basically just to have the same bedroom, the same kitchen. But he didn't realize that growing up in a trailer park and moving from trailer park maybe twice in 1 year would be so challenging for his daughter. And it was really rough when I tried to do a paper route because the dogs, you hear of junkyard dogs, trailer park dogs that would chase me. But anyway, I just kept going because this is my life. I was always the new kid in school. I was always the one that was being introduced at the last, in the middle of the year. And living in the trailer, it made me, I realize now as an adult woman, that I it made me who I am today because of going through all these experiences and going and experiencing different cultures and different countries and different towns all across the United States. My father, when he was stationed to Guam, of course, we couldn't take the trailer, which I was so happy about. But little did I know that when we moved to Guam, it was during the Vietnam War, 1969, that we would not have any housing. My father basically, he was needed over there. His number was up to go to Guam. And when we went on the base, all the soldiers were living in tents everywhere. And there was zero housing on the island, the tiny island of Guam. We had to move into a corrugated tin, lime green, house that basically, it was a shack that had three rooms and a dirt floor. And, of course, being a seven-year-old kid, I thought it was awesome because we had banana trees outside the front door.
Mm-hmm. And it was an adventure. And what
totally
I know about you is that you do like adventures and you're extremely adaptable. And I think having moved a little bit when I was growing up, not as many times as you did certainly, but I had started school mid-year as well. My family moved from the Virginia area to New Hampshire, and I started mid-year at a French Catholic school, and everyone was French. I think later in life that comes in handy because it teaches you know we've experienced how to be flexible and how to just fit in with new kids and new situations.
Absolutely, learning to adapt.
Right, learning to adapt. And so do you think that skill has come in handy for you?
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. In fact, when we were in Guam, we found out that I was deaf in my right ear, and I was born that way. And I went through 7 years of my life being the child that was selective hearing, undisciplined, didn't pay attention, and was tagged as a troublesome child in school. But it was all because I couldn't hear. And when we found out, I ended up getting hearing aids. So it made it even tougher going to school because back then in the 60s and 70s, the technology wasn't available that we have today. And I had to wear a little box and a little pocket hanging around my neck with wires going up to my ears. And it looked like I had my iPod on. But back then we didn't even know what an iPod was. So it was very harsh. It was very hard, and kids are mean. So I ended up being an introvert, believe it or not. I was an introvert because it was easier to be quiet and not deal with the meanness of other children and people mm-hmm. being ignorant and not understanding. Mm-hmm. But my father, thank goodness, put me in a school for hard of hearing and the school for the deaf for at least 1 year when we lived in Wichita Falls, Texas. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me in my life because I found out it doesn't matter what I sound like. I had a very, very hard time slurring because I couldn't enunciate because I didn't hear the word clearly because mm-hmm. I only had one ear. But what I found out, I had a classroom of six kids that I was in the class with, and nobody else could enunciate or even say a word because they never heard the word. Mm. They never heard the word. And so I realized, it doesn't matter what I sound like. It doesn't matter what I live in, you know, where I come from. What matters is I'm here and I can talk and I have choices and I can speak. And my parents put me in for speech therapy, and I was in speech therapy for many years to be able to enunciate. I still have trouble today when I get really tired. And itself made me realize, you know, I didn't understand this at the time. But my mother, Betty Jean, she basically said, you're not going to be a victim. I know you don't like moving around. I know you don't like your father's career and being deaf and having to wear hearing aids, but you're going to stop being a victim and quit whining, and let's go knock on some doors, and you're going to get to know the other kids and people in the neighborhood. And so I was basically selling vacuums door to door at the age of 13, which I didn't realize at the time. Yeah,
oh
I wasn't
God.
Selling vacuums. I was selling me, which was so weird because I didn't
right.
even understand it. Yeah, my mama would say, Mary Alice, you need to tell people that you can babysit and you do magic shows. And that's what I did. I made magic for for kids' parties. I made money doing that. But you know what she did? She forced me to get out of the house. And even though we moved in the middle of the summer and I didn't know any kids again, and I was a strange kid with the weird wires in her ears, you know, it gave me courage. And it told me to get, she taught me to be assertive.
Wow.
And not be afraid and be aggressively assertive almost.
With a smile,
because she would always say, don't wait for someone to smile at you. Always smile, always say hello, even if you're on the elevator, you know.
I love
and
that's great advice for anyone at any age, but I think women often, you know, not so much now, but certainly our generation, the end of the baby boomer generation, you know, women were taught to be seen and not heard from and, you know, not to be assertive, that to be assertive was somehow unladylike. And I know I was an introvert, too, when I was growing up, and a lot of people find that fascinating now that I'm a talk
that
show host
wild.
And I love public speaking, but I was afraid to public speak. I was afraid to speak my mind. I was the youngest of six. And my mother was not as encouraging as you in terms of get out there and go door to door and selling, although she had done some retail. I think after she got divorced, she was doing some retail in the late 60s, early 70s, first time working outside of the home. And I love that your mother encouraged you to go door to door. I love that she told you to get out of the house because, you know what? So many kids these days are inside, they're in front of the computer, in front of the TV, on their phones, they're not getting out, they're not learning how to socialize, and I am like shocked when I see my nieces and nephews, especially the second generation, my nieces and nephews' kids who are like teenagers now, they don't know how to socialize, they don't know how to hold a conversation, they don't know how to interact with adults, and it's scary to me because we are
True.
Raising this generation of, you know, and it's not even that they're introverts. It's just that, like, they don't even care or something. I don't know what it is. But I love that your smile, you know, you are definitely a person that doesn't wait to share a smile and pass on love. And as someone has told me before, you know, just even smiling at a stranger is passing on a loving feeling, a loving moment. And your greeter at the Foundry Art Center, we definitely want to say a shout out to the Foundry Art Center on North Main Street in historic St. Charles. Beautiful working environment for artists. There's many studios that people, visitors can go in and talk to the artists. I've taken painting classes there with Ann Krogan. Tell us about the Foundry and about putting yourself in an environment surrounded by artists. And I neglected to introduce you properly as the founder and creator of Mary Alice's Palace, where you create hair pieces, fascinators, unusual hats that really stand out, as well as framed artwork, and we'll talk about that. But tell us about the Foundry and your involvement there.
Sure. Last year in December, I was laid off from a career with cardiology and radiology. I worked in, believe it or not, with computers and technology. When that happened, it was a major change in my life in December. I was with that company for 9 years. And anyway, at that point, I embraced being unemployed because I, you know, it was December. I had time all of a sudden to do things and make things. And so after being in the house for about a month, in January, my husband was like, you need to get outside. You need to go start introducing yourself to the community. You don't really know anyone here. We had moved here from Richmond, Virginia. And so I went down to the art center. It was actually Sam, my husband's idea, to go down there. He told me to go on down there and introduce yourself. So I did. And I actually took a class there, too, for painting and just to get to know some of the volunteers there. And I ended up getting my foot in the door. Somebody, Janice, a lady that works here, she pushed my name under Sue Mattingly, who's the director of the Foundry Volunteers. And she asked me if I would volunteer. And so I have actually been a greeter down there for about, since probably about March, February, March, and I love it. The people coming in the door from all over the world. It's amazing the traffic that comes through the art center down there at the Foundry. And then you're right, it's a beautiful space. It's a beautiful space.
Well,
and I love all the artists.
Speaking of
there.
Visitors, you know, now that, you know, we've only been on Main Street for a couple of months with the shop Butterfly and Moon, and, you know, the other day we had someone in from Paris. Over the weekend we had someone from Holland. We've had visitors from Australia and Germany and Canada. I mean, it is amazing. Somehow the international visitors find their way to St. Charles. They've heard about its historic background as the original state capital here in Missouri, about the beautiful Missouri River that it sits next to, and about the cobblestone streets and the quaint little shops. And there's something for every taste there on Main Street. And we definitely want to shout out to all the businesses in St. Charles and, you know, thank the people that have been coming to visit us and other shops and, you know, to shop local, the importance of shopping local and helping the local economy and helping local artists. There are so many products now that are imported from China and Vietnam and other Bangladesh where who knows who makes them. You know, often there's child labor, poor working conditions where, you know, women are not getting paid a fair wage. They're working 12 hours a day. Now, so you have a home-based business and you are making hats at your house. How is that process of setting up your own business in your house? And do you have enough room? And how did you create a room of your own? How did you build your creative space?
Sure. What happened is part of, again, my husband's pushing me to get out the door, probably because he's an engineer and quiet, and I was driving him crazy with my talking. So I got out the door and went to a tea party. It was a meetup.com, and there's a lady named Lori Breyer that actually took a picture of my hat that I wore. I made a hat because, again, I was unemployed. So I made a hat out of found objects. A flower, et cetera. And I did it because of not having money, and I needed to, and I wanted to express myself. I wanted to be creative. So I went down to Central West End and went to this tea room, and people were taking pictures, and they were shared, and I think you were actually your store down. She shared it with you, and I didn't even know you, and that you had a business downtown. And anyway, through her, I started exploring making hats. Now, how did I create a studio? It all of a sudden just exploded. Because when I met you and I met others, they were like, hey, I like your hats. You know, you're so one of a kind, and how do you come up with it? Basically, anything can inspire me, but mostly it's just like a nature, a flower. Tiny one small design element, like a flower, can inspire me to create a whole line of hats and ideas. What I did, though, we have a three-bedroom home here in St. Charles, and we have a basement, and it's a fully finished basement. And so I took our spare bedroom we had down there, flipped the mattress up on the side, and started creating a millinery studio.
That's hilarious.
I know. I had to have my husband help me, but we did, and I have all kinds of lace and Russian veils, netting, hanging on the wall, just waiting for me to create more, and I've been creating every day just because I'm so inspired, and I find it so relaxing to sit there and hand stitch and then to put it on my head and then look in the mirror and say, okay, can a person really wear this? And then turn and bend and dance even in my living room to make sure it stays on my head, because who wants to have a hat if it doesn't stay on their head?
Well, that's for sure. And do you think the royal wedding a few years ago with Kate and William just boosted hat sales
absolutely.
And interest in hats?
Absolutely. That and different cultures, you know, there's still women today that wear hats. I met a lady in your store named Edith, who I took a picture of with one of my hat called the Queen of Iraq.
Edith is a Zonta member from Zonta International. Yep.
She is so nice. Anyhow, she said she had over 300 hats. And that she said she I had a wonderful conversation with her the day of your ribbon ceremony. She told me that she had over 300 hats and that she was known as the hat lady at her church. And all the ladies every Sunday would look forward to seeing her different hat.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Well,
I
we need to just have a hat exhibit. I was chuckling because last night at the Foundry, we were both there for Second Thursday, which happens every month. Second Thursday of the month, there's artists that come together to demonstrate an art skill. And there was a temporary exhibit in one of the galleries that was on aprons and vintage aprons from, I remember my Aunt Bea when I was growing up wearing all these aprons. I have some of them. But I'm thinking we definitely need to put together a hat exhibit because they are works of art. They're incredible. And I'm going to welcome, speaking of art, joining us on Alive to Thrive today is the showcase director for Raw Artist, which takes place all over the country. And Mary Alice was chosen as one of the featured Raw Artists to be in their upcoming Glimpse show on July 16th at the Ready Room, coming up next week here in St. Louis. And I was a Raw Artist in 2013 and 2014. We were there with our jewelry designs, Butterfly and Moon, and it definitely jump-started our artistic career and definitely put us on the map in a different way. We had been making jewelry for about 10 years, but once you're in a Raw showcase, you meet other artists, you're meeting patrons and supporters and customers and people that appreciate rare and unusual independent artist. So I want to welcome Julia to the program. Hi, Julia. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for calling in to Alive to Thrive. Tell us a little bit about Raw and how you got involved as a showcase director.
Yeah, totally. Thank you so much for having me. I've been in Raw since last January. It's a funny story. I actually found the job on Craigslist, so you wouldn't think that. But I was just a lowly assistant doing all the little grunt work and the social media, but I just loved it. And I had so much fun helping Laurel do it. Laurel was the director when I came in. And then in July, I had the privilege of getting asked to be the director. So that was really incredible. And I've really just had an amazing experience being in Raw. And just working for Raw is really incredible. We are an international organization. We have over 70 locations now all over the world, which is great. Like, we're huge. Like, we're well-known. Like, we're really getting our name out there, even though we've only been around for 6 years. I love the fact that we're still a very grassroots, small business type of organization. I still text the founder, Heidi, late at night, and she answers. So that's really incredible that we're very connected. We're very much like a family of artists working together to help other artists. So that's a really incredible group to be a part of. And just the opportunities that have come into the artists I've worked with have just been so great to watch. That's what really keeps me going, enjoying what I do. And I recently started doing Tulsa, so I'm actually sitting in Tulsa right now. I have my first meeting with the Tulsa group, and that's very exciting as well. So, yeah, that's a little bit about my story.
Well, we'll have to connect you to some of our friends in Tulsa. We have... Alive to Thrive has several followers in Tulsa and friends and supporters there. I actually almost did an all-day speaker showcase there, but we'll definitely connect you. I know there's a Center for Spiritual Living there that my friend Reverend Pat Powers is involved with. And anyway, we'll connect you there. So tell us about how social media has changed for the better in terms of helping artists get known, get their name out there, and be noticed for their designs.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think social media is just, you know, crucial to people getting their work out there now. You know, because, I mean, there's such a gap between, you know, when you are starting an idea, when you're creating your art, you know, sitting in your basement making a painting or making a hat or, you know, anything like that, and then actually getting it to a gallery space or selling it in a fair or a festival. It's a big jump. And I think social media really helps cushion that and really get you, you know, build your confidence. You can start posting pictures of your work on social media. You can start getting people's feedback. You can get, you know, people saying, your work is amazing, and you can actually get people to buy your work on social media, which is incredible. And it's just, I found a lot of artists through social media, which is amazing. Like, I will stumble upon a friend of a friend of a friend and just see, like, oh, you know, they have this jewelry page, or, oh, look at their background is actually one of their original pieces of art. And I've looked at them and been like, oh, my goodness, like, they're incredible. And they're just in that in-between stage of getting their work out of their basement to, you know, being in a gallery. And it's amazing that I'm actually able to talk to those people, because if it weren't for social media, I would have no way of knowing they existed. So true.
Yeah, and I love that about Raw having a Facebook page for every city that there's a showcase, because the artists are, there's like one artist a day that's featured. And
yes,
when I was a Raw artist, I went through and connected with a fashion designer, and then I was able to have my jewelry on the runway at Raw Showcase and to meet the other artists, you know, at least virtually initially. And then last year we did a interview with, I think I had like 10, at one point, 10 different artists that called into the Alive to Thrive, and we had this like wonderful party line of all the different people that were
awesome.
Participating. But one of my friends had come to the showcase in 2013, and she has since that time, she was so inspired by the environment, she started taking up painting, and we have her angel paintings in our store. So
that's
a shout
great.
Out to Jody Hart, and hopefully she will apply to be a Raw artist.
Because
she's
doing
great. Beautiful
awesome.
Angel paintings, and we now carry her art at Butterfly and Moon. And Julia,
that's
when
amazing.
You're here next in St. Louis, please stop by the shop. We would love to show you, you know, a Raw artist alumni and how Raw has helped us manifest our dreams. So
definitely, love that.
That's so true. And so I know another aspect of the Raw experience is the online ticket sales, and each artist is asked and expected to invite their friends and family to support them, which also empowers the artist to start thinking like a business person and start thinking like, it's great to just create your work, but it's not going to do anyone any good if you go to your grave and your art is not ever seen and it stays stuck in your house or your basement. So talk to us about the ticket sale aspect, and is that hard for artists to do, or is it easy? How do you encourage the artists to sell their tickets?
Yeah, totally. That's a great question. You know, I mean, I've worked with all kinds of artists, and to be completely honest, it really depends on their personality whether or not it's hard. You know, because there are artists that are just very introverted and quiet, and they, you know, hate talking to people, imposing on people, asking people to do anything, even if it means, you know, coming to an awesome show. And I really work one-on-one with those artists a lot of the time, and pretty much anytime they ask, and just say, you know, this is how you do it. I walk them through it. And it's really awesome to, like, get to help these people promote themselves. I really try to keep it like a learning experience for them. Like, I'm right there with them, walking them through it, which is, you know, really unheard of. Like, if you go to an art gallery, they're not going to teach you how to promote yourself. You know, if you do it, you know, on Etsy, they're not going to send you hints and tricks, like, for free to get more people interested. So I think it's an amazing opportunity for me to, like, really help people and give them the confidence they need, really, to just, you know, talk about themselves, promote their work, and really just be excited to be a part of the art community, not, you know, shy about it or embarrassed. So that's, I really enjoy helping people, giving them ideas. And after doing this for, you know, a year now, I really know how to invite people, and just to, you know, say, you know, this is a great time. You need to come. Like, it's a lot of fun. And, you know, I've never had somebody come up to me and say, oh, I'm so sad I came to this. What a waste of time. So it's really, it's a great experience for patrons and artists alike. And yeah, I think the ticket selling is just, it's a great way to learn, to promote themselves. And, you know, it's just amazing that artists don't have to pay anything to be in a show, that there's no entry fee and that there's no booth fee and that there's no commission taken out of anything. Like, it's just a great starter for them. And I've also noticed that patrons love supporting artists. Like, when they find out that, you know, oh, my ticket is literally buying your way in the show, like, it's literally giving you this promotional package, that's incredible. Like, the patrons love doing that because they're literally supporting the art. It's not just, oh, you know, if you pay this door fee, like, it might help the local community, it might not, like, we don't really know, you know, sometimes, you know, you just don't know. And this is like, you know exactly where the money's going, you know exactly how much you're helping these artists, and that's really powerful to let the community know they can be of service to the arts community. So yeah, I think it's a really great concept. It's worked really, really well for artists I've worked with.
And it's true that, and people that aren't local, that won't be physically going to the event, can buy tickets and support the artists. I know, I think because of my raw experience, I do have that proactive aspect with our artists that we carry at Butterfly and Moon,
mm-hmm.
to help promote them and teach them more
right.
about social media. In fact, I don't know if I should tell this funny little story on Mary Ellis, but when I first met Mary Ellis, she had a Facebook page with her husband, and I'm like, no, you cannot do that. You're your own person. But I've had women artists come into the shop that we carry, and I'll say, what is the name of your painting? She's like, I'm not sure. I will ask my husband. And I'm like, no, your husband didn't paint that painting. You painted that painting, and you need to dig deep and find a title and name for that. But I think once people are involved in RAW, do you have a sense that percentages of women versus men, I mean, is it equal, or do you feel like there's more women out there applying, at least, as RAW artists? Julia?
That's a great question. I've actually never made, like, I've never looked at that, but it really depends on the show. I think it's pretty equal at this point, but sometimes I'll have a show that is predominantly women. Sometimes I'll have one that's mostly men. So it really depends. And I kind of like that. Like, I like the fact that it's a really nice mixture. It's not just male dominant, which is great. So, you know, I've seen both. I've really seen a pretty equal mixture of people applying. And you know, I will say, I do kind of think that women are a little more gung-ho about it. Men are a little more skeptical, but women usually jump in with both feet, get it going, and finish the job. I have noticed that a little bit. So,
and tell us about the theme. I like how each of the showcases have themes, and this one's known as Glimpse, which is,
yes.
I had a smile because I use a facial system called Glimpse from Zango.
Oh, cool.
And so tell us about the name and about the theme, and is that theme just for St. Louis, or is it national?
Yeah, it is. It's actually international. Every single show in July will be called Glimpse. Well, maybe not international. Maybe Australia has different names. I'm not sure. But I know the ones in the U.S. all will be called Glimpse. And, you know, some artists do run with that, and I love that. The one we had in January, I think it was January, Visionary, we had a lady who was a photographer, and she had a guy use, he had, like, free-flowing curtains that he was working with, and he did some like raft work. Like he was like hanging from rafters really high up, and she took amazing photographs of him. And it was very like visionary. That's really what it looked like. And she made that whole section just visionary. So it really is neat whenever artists take the title and run with it. Yeah, that is really neat. But we all share the same title. Our next show in St. Louis will be called Bold. That's in September. And then and I am booking for that too. If there are artists on the line, now is the time to submit. I already have a good lineup. So
what's
definitely
the date in September?
Yeah. It's September 10th. It's another Thursday at 8:00, and it's at the Ready Room again.
And tell us how artists apply. I mean, I know, but let's get it out on the air.
Yeah, it's really simple. It's a really easy website. It's pretty much like making a Facebook. You go on and you register. And once you've registered, it's going to send you to another page that says, want to submit your work. And the way that you get qualified to be in a show is you click that submission button, you make a submission, and then I will review your submission. And if it seems like a good fit, I will give you a call. And that's pretty much how it works. It's very simple.
So an artist, once they're accepted into a showcase, can come back to... I know we did a second showcase in St.
Yeah.
Louis. Can they go to other cities? How many times can a raw artist come back?
That's a great question. Yeah. I mean, obviously, it has to do with being in a good standing with Raw. You know, as with any organization, you definitely need to keep the relationship good. But, like, as long as you have a good relationship and your work is amazing and you were very successful the first time, I do ask for, like, a little different work. Like, you know, I typically have people, you know, show a little, like, maybe their other side of their collection or just a few, like, new pieces, that sort of thing, if they're going to do another show. But they're always invited. If they're in good standing, we have a good relationship, and their work is amazing and they're doing well, like, yeah, they can come back. They just need to contact me, let me know they're interested again. But as far as out-of-state shows, what we do is really incredible. Once you've done a show in St. Louis, you're invited to do a show out of state, which is incredible. It's a completely free show, no entry fee, no ticket sales. So that's incredible. And you do get one free show per every show you do in St. Louis. So people can take advantage of that as many times as they want, which is amazing. And I've had people, you know, go to New York or New Orleans or Nashville. You can go as far as London or Australia. So that's amazing. Plus, it's a trip with a tax write-off, you know, because you're doing it for your business. So it's like, you know, go somewhere awesome. Like, it's really incredible. So, that is something amazing that we do to give our artists exposure in a different market. If, you know, keep the relationship good with Raw, I always recommend that because you never know when you want to take advantage of our opportunities. And then also, this is new. Brenda, I'm not sure if you've seen this, but we just created an agency called Sound, and it is specifically for Raw artists, and it's a way for corporations and different art galleries and people, private industries seeking artists. They will look specifically through our Raw Artist Network, the people who have done shows previously, and they will send out artist calls. They will select artists individually, and they will actually give them paid gigs, which is amazing.
Wow. I saw something about that.
Mm.
I glanced at that yesterday, and it really caught my eye, and I thought, I need to look more into that. That's a fantastic idea.
I'm glad it's incredible.
And I'm glad you mentioned about going to another country, because that was originally on my bucket list, to go to Australia. I've been to Australia once before. In fact, I was there for a Zonta International Convention in Melbourne maybe it was like 8 years ago. I was just starting making jewelry, and one of the cool components we found there were hand-painted gum nuts painted by the Aboriginal women, and we actually put them with coral. And I think just talking to you has gotten me pumped up again that maybe Mary Alice and I can go gallivanting off to London or Australia or somewhere else and go to another Raw showcase. So the only other Raw showcase I've been to is Boulder, Colorado, and it was certainly fun, since I used to live out in Colorado, to to go to a showcase in another state that where you know I knew the venue at least. So fantastic! I love it. Lots of exciting things happening. And any other things on the horizon for RAW, the organization?
One thing I have been arranging is a service project. I'm trying to do a service project at least once a year. So we're going to be partnering with Easter Seals Midwest, and we are going to be doing an art workshop with the people that are there. So that's really incredible. Not, you know, like a huge artist opportunity, but I think service is really important. So that's something I'm going to involve my artists in as well. So that's really awesome.
That is really
great.
Cool. Well, we hope to continue talking and building a relationship maybe with the St. Charles Riverfront Arts that I'm now on the board of as we do these second Thursday events in St. Charles. We're always looking for artists to participate. There's no charge. They come and teach basically all ages, from children to adults to special needs, on a Thursday night from 5:30 to 8, and we have 10 different artists. So maybe that's something that RAW Artists and the St. Charles Riverfront Arts Organization can partner on, or something else like one of our Art Walk events in the fall. We do a lot of events throughout the year, so we'll have to continue talking offline about some of those things. So what are you doing, Mary Alice, to prepare for the RAW Artist Showcase next week here in St. Louis? Julia was telling us there's going to be a lot of different artists. What are you going to do, Mary Alice, to stand out?
Sure. Thank you. What I'm doing is getting as creative as I can possibly get. In fact, I have made some really cool hats recently over the last 2 weeks involving a birdcage. One is over 3 feet tall once you put
it on
your head. And it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. I hand-stitched the feathers and then pulled in a flower and then added real wood shavings from nature with flowers and painted the flowers and added it to it. It's really quite beautiful, even though it's very large. And you can actually wear it. Again, it's wearable.
Is that the one that Heather Womble will be wearing?
Yes, Heather Womble. She volunteered to be a model last night. Thank you. And I hope that she'll be able to wear it. And I'm also making some Mad Max theme headbands with metal and feathers and jewelry, bauble, beautiful bling. And, again, it's just something to stand out. A lot of women don't want to wear a hat, or we do, but we don't have the courage to go out in public in a hat. Or we think, oh, no, we look silly. Do we take it off when we go inside? You know, what's the deal with hats? Well, these are more like headbands, hair fascinators with a clip. But I do. One thing I've just recently started doing is I've started picking up some vintage hats that are really almost falling apart, and then repurposing them, retaking every one of them apart, cleaning them up, putting new Russian netting on them, adding beautiful feathers and flowers to them, and it turned into a really their own piece of art. And I'm actually researching the different what years they were created. One is a nice leopard print fur that's a little box hat that is just absolutely stunning, but I'm going to have those at the show next week.
I love it. I love it. And I think a lot of women have memories and stories about their mothers and aunts. I know I had an aunt that lived in Boston that always had some incredible hats, and she would go to the opera and the theater. And I have a few of those, and I treasure them because, you know, there was a period, I think hats and other any type of fashion accessory sort of goes in waves. It, you know, comes in style and then it goes out of style. And I think hats are definitely making a comeback. And I love the fact that you're experimenting with all these different components and repurposing and using found objects. So we have a lot to look forward to. I know at the shop we've had one that looks like a giant daisy, and we've had the little butterflies, which is great because it ties into the theme of butterfly and moon. But those little butterflies are really nice for any occasion. They're great for summer, and they're not too overly complicated. But we have had, you know, a really good response to your hats, and I think people are excited to wear them throughout the year, not just at Kentucky Derby time. But tell us about Derby time. I mean, that is a huge event, not only in Kentucky, but all around the country. People have Derby parties. Will you be coming out with a new line next spring to for that?
Yes, absolutely. I do plan on upping my game on that. In fact, as I create more and more hats and come up with more creative ideas, which, by the way, is my true passion, one of a kind, basically setting limits on myself where, hey, instead of doing a pattern or how much can I mass produce, making one of a kind. In fact, I had somebody recently ask for a one of a kind design for their special birthday. They gave me specific colors that they wanted in the hat design, but that was it. I had creative license to do whatever I wanted with making it, other than size and how big she wanted it and how she wanted it, because she has short hair. She was afraid it wasn't going to be able to stay in her hair. I attached a headband to it, and it turned out beautiful. She absolutely loves it. In fact, I saw her last night at Foundry, Melissa, and she just adores it. But I plan on building up that part once I get through raw art, because I really want to concentrate on raw artists show next week. I really plan on expanding this. In fact, I contacted, working through you, Brenda, I actually met Debbie Townsend, and she's actually creating right now, working on a website for my art. And then I'm going to start doing my blogging on creating and maybe doing some YouTube videos to show people how to do this. And also other things that I do in my palace, Mary Alice's Palace, like life hacks and cooking and my passion for gardening. So I really do plan on expanding that area and then getting my calendar up to date with all the different races, horse races, dog races, places where people would wear the hats in the U.S., and also churches, you know. Women do want to wear them, but I find that when I speak to them, they're afraid it won't stay in their head or they'll look silly. But once they try it on, they're shocked how they don't even know it's in their head, that it's like attached to their hair, because I make them so lightweight, and that's really important
well,
to me.
Well, beyond
that people
the
can wear
creative
them.
Aspect of your art and your craft, there are a lot of life skills that you, as other entrepreneurs and women in business, need to develop. And you took a class called Beyond Your Best Life Coaching Course. What was that about? Who teaches it? Is it still offered? Tell us a little bit about that coaching course.
Sure.
I think is the other half of the coin. Like, you know, this, you know, permission to be creative, that's great, but there's so many other aspects to being an entrepreneur. Tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Thank you for asking me about that. There was a time in my life that I battled cancer myself, and so does my husband. But it was during the time of being a caregiver for my husband when he was going through a rare cancer. I had a colleague going through treatment for it, chemo and radiation, both at the same time, all within 3 months. It was quite, I mean, it's awful to see somebody that you love falling apart and almost, you know, possibly dying in front of you. It was a major point in my life that I, as optimistic as I am, had a difficult time with trying to keep that smile on so he didn't see me weak when I tried to help him, because he was already weak. I had a colleague notice me at work, and he sent me an email. I was working from home because my husband was burning up and very sick. And he called me out of the blue on a Sunday and said, you know, you came across my mind today. And I normally wouldn't answer a work phone on a Sunday, but I did. And he said, you know, I don't know if you ever read Don Miguel Ruiz's book, The Four Agreements. He goes, or if you've ever considered going to like a life coaching experience. Because I noticed that you're doing so much for others. You need to, I feel like you need this. So he got me involved. I met him for lunch. And as soon as my husband got through his treatment, which was a couple weeks later, I went to this class. And it wasn't just a class. It was from 8 in the morning to midnight every single day, intense workshop focused on me. And everyone there. There was men from all over the place, all over the United States, men and women. One guy flew in from Maine to come to this class. It was Indianapolis, Indiana. And we're basically locked in a room, and they put you through scenarios. We're crazy scenarios. Like, what are you afraid of people looking at you and thinking about you for acting this way? Or, like, why do you care about somebody, what they think about you wearing that dress? Why would you need to worry about that? You don't. It's, you just take care of yourself and be yourself. That's what makes us all wonderful in this world, is our individuality. And so what it did is it taught me, again, it pushed me further as an adult, that courage I had as a young girl with my mom pushing me to be an adult woman in a society that you have to fit in with work, you know, the corporate world. It told me that, hey, it doesn't matter. Be yourself. You come up with great ideas with brainstorming with other people. And this course basically taught me to love myself and to go out there and just share that with the world and how to make the world a better place and be beyond your own best of self-discovery. And it was really just, I can't
stress
enough how important it was. And I still have a card from my coach from the class that says, take time out for you. The other stuff will still be there. It doesn't matter. The other stuff will always be there. But take time for yourself.
That
and
is
that's
so
what
important.
I'm doing right now.
And that book by Don Ruiz, Miguel Ruiz, The Four Agreements, I have it right here on my bookshelf here in my studio, as well as his son's book, The Wisdom of the Rattlesnake. He was here in St. Louis just a few months ago. So we and I had him on the radio show on Alive to Thrive. So great wisdom from the Toltec tradition. And, you know, there's so many wonderful books out there. What other books and that you've read, Mary Alice, or people that have inspired you? Who are some
sure.
of the people that continue to inspire you?
Continuing on a daily basis, my husband, who I've been married to for 33 years, Sam, I have to tell you, has been a person that has done nothing but support me 100% in my life, encouraging me to join the Air Force when I was a deaf girl. You know, how did I get through basic training and how did I do that? You know, I'm deaf in my right ear. And so from every aspect of my life, he's encouraged me. And then the book, one of the books I read is called Leadership and Knowing Your Strengths, Strengths Builders. It's called Strength Builders 2.0. A girlfriend of mine, a colleague from work, gave it to me, and I read it. And it's basically concentrating on, we're always told throughout our life what we need to work on, that what we don't do well at, you know, even from a little child. You need to work on your math. Your math is just not up to par. You know, even though you're getting A's in art or whatever, other courses that you're in or from your church or from people in your community, you're told, oh, you need to do this or you need to do that. But what would the world be like if we focused on our natural strengths that we were born with?
Mm-hmm.
And wow, what if, you know, we just concentrated on what our natural strengths are, you know, and how amazing could we be if we just focused on the positive and just the other stuff, sure, keep working on it. But really, it's that story of taking what you're naturally given, born into this world, and helping others with it and focusing on just making the world a better place and helping yourself. It's a great book. I recommend it to everyone. It's a short book. It's a test at the end of it. You do a test, and it tells you what your five top strengths are. And my number one is called Woo, W-O-O. And it's basically,
I'm not surprised. That was my number one, too.
Oh, wow. And it's basically winning others over and anything that anybody that's difficult. And I always wondered during my career in my corporate world, why was I always getting the hard assignments? Why was I always getting the ones that were, like, tough? Well, it's because I have that natural strength that I didn't even know was a strength, which is winning others over and talking to them and working through and listening to them, which, again, I think is part of being deaf, of observing people and listening and just watching them and trying to pick up on body language and working
with them. That's hilarious.
I've never met another person that had a high woo factor. That's hilarious. So no wonder we're good friends. So I want to give everyone your websites to find you. So if they want to support Raw Artists and especially see Mary Alice's profile, it's rawartist.org/Mary Alice's Palace. You don't put a hyphen in that. You just write Mary Alice with an S, Palace, and you can see her profile page on Raw Artists. And then she is also on Facebook, and soon we'll be launching a blog page and a website. And there is also an artist page for you, Mary Alice. I'm not even sure you're aware of this. ButterflyandMoon.com will be going live this weekend, and each of the artists that is featured in our boutique has a page with their picture, their bio, and a few pictures of their work. And again, shout out to Debbie Townsend for creating that. We've been working on it for a couple of months. And then we'll look forward to having YouTube videos posted about Mary Alice's creations. We will also carry those on at Gala Force. Well, my Gala Force YouTube is, I think, Gala Force LLC, perhaps. But we'll have a Butterfly Moon channel that people can tune in and check out Mary Alice's designs. And she has an Etsy shop as well. And that Etsy shop is called Mary Alice's Palace. So you can look at some of her designs. We'll be continuing to post pictures as she's making new creations feverishly between now and the Raw Artist Showcase. And any closing thoughts or closing quotes? We have just a minute or two left.
Sure. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of what people might think, what they might say. Take risks. If you don't do it for yourself, no one else is going to do it for you. You just need to put yourself out there. For me, making my own hat was driven because I didn't have money, and I wanted to be different, and I wanted to stand out. So, you know, take risk and listen to others when they suggest go on and apply to become a Raw Artist. Even if you don't believe in yourself, try it. You never know what's going to happen.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. There looks like there was a caller that called in. I wanted to just jump over and see if this caller from area code 512 had a closing question or thought for our guest today.
Hi there. How are you all doing?
Good.
Great.
This is Julia. I don't have a question. I tuned in kind of late, but I love y'all's show.
Thank you so much, Julia. What state are you calling from?
I'm from Texas.
Fantastic. Well, and our guest today was born in Abilene, Texas. So shout out to Texans. And is there a Raw Artist? Is there a showcase in Texas? Julia, are you still on the line with us?
Yes.
Yeah, there are lots of shows in Texas.
What
yes,
cities? Austin?
I know there's one in Austin. I know there's one in Dallas. I think there's one in Houston and maybe a couple more, actually. Texas is so big, which I think there might be more, but I know those three for sure.
Well, fantastic. Thank you for calling in. We have listeners all across the country, all across the globe, and the beauty of Blog Talk Radio is that after we air live, the show is immediately archived. So please continue to share the link, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/AliveToThrive. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll be back next week with more fascinating women and trending topics in art, culture, and film. Take care. Have a good weekend. We're going to close out with Michael Franti and his song, Hey, I Love You.
Hold on, Selecta.
I know, but
metaphysical man, but I know when the stars are aligned, you can bump into a person.